You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Gualdo Tadino.
Cozze cittadine, cozze vicine, non spicudeci ora, non spicudeci ora.
And obviously for big guys like us, it's never easy when it's a big start like this, but hopefully once the break goes and it sort of settles down a little bit, we'll come back to the group and then we'll assess the situation there, whether or not we have to ride much today or whether we can take it a little bit easier.
So if you were to go over that climb, let's say, you know, you and Swain, 3 minutes down behind the peloton, at that point you ride and try and get back on, 2 or 3 minutes?
Oh yeah, definitely. Hopefully not so far behind. If you're 3 minutes behind, it can be much more of a chase. But on the other hand, if you're 3 minutes behind, it means it's been super, super hard, which means that there's a lot of guys dropped. And then in that situation, you have a big group. And as long as we stay as close as we can to the bunch at the top, or if we're dropped, we stay with Viviani and Quickstep, then normally it should be okay.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney, and I'm with Daniel Freebe. And now, Daniel, you're becoming something of a clairvoyant on the Cycling Podcast, because that was the voice of Sam Bewley of Mitchelton Scott, and you were speculating what would he do if he found himself 3 minutes down at the top of the first climb with Simon Yates and Esteban Chavez to protect today on the Giro Stage 10. What you didn't say was that Esteban Chavez would be with him and that Sam Bewley and Chavez would be about 3 minutes down at the top of the climb, and it turned out to be a pretty disastrous day for Esteban Chavez, really.
I'm like Mystic Meg. I'm like, what's the adjective for divine, divination? What's the adjective for maybe we'll look that up later. Anyway, it didn't quite go the way I expected or the way Sam Bewley expected. And I was waiting for him when he got back to the Mitchelton Scott team bus. And then you're going to also hear from Matt White. And finally, from the unfortunate protagonist of the day, Esteban Chavez.
So everyone here's kind of asking themselves what happened. We haven't got that much information. What did Esteban tell you?
He didn't tell me anything. Maybe he's just there. You can ask him what happened here.
Tough old day though, yeah?
Yeah. It was hard. We did chase for a long time. We hoped we'd come back, but we didn't. So unfortunately, Esteban's off the GC now. But on a positive note, we still have the pink jersey with Simon, so lots to play for.
And you did all that work with Esteban in Colombia. It must be hard to see that. I mean, I know he's obviously still in the race, but it's been jeopardised to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's always hard. It's hard because he's a friend of mine. But hey, we live to fight another day. You know, tomorrow, the sun will set tonight, the sun will rise tomorrow, and we'll see what happens after that.
You sound like Esteban. Thanks. Cheers. So, Matt, we're all sort of in the dark still about exactly what happened to Esteban.
Join the club. I have no idea, mate. I have no idea. I'm presuming that he had problems with his breathing, with allergies, because he's not sick, didn't crash, and he's not injured. So your guess is as good as mine at the moment. So,
and the gap went out pretty quickly, did it, as far as you could see?
Yeah, other teams started riding straight away. So he got dropped, I can't remember where exactly on that Category 2 climb, and when other teams saw second place on GC, they pushed it as hard as they could.
So you're on the radio. There weren't any messages coming back about what exactly the problem was. No.
No, because like I said, he didn't crash and he's not sick. So Roman Cruzinger said on the radio that him and Esteban had been dropped. He waited with him, and then we caught him. And we thought maybe he just passed a bit of a bad moment. And obviously we didn't wait with him. He had Roman with him, and then we got Sam Bewley to wait initially, and then we sent back Chris Jules Jensen as well, because they were holding it 2 minutes. And we thought we might be able to bridge across there. And also, we needed, having Yatesy up front there, I didn't want that to blow out as well. And in the end of the day, it's certainly wasn't ideal, but it could have been a lot worse as well.
This is the Giro. That's how it is. I've got a relationship of tough love with Italy. It's a tough, rough kind of love. A few days ago, I had one of my very best days here. And now, well, it's hard. It's hard for my morale, but that's life. We can only give what we've got and no more. We've still got the jersey, and that's the most important thing. The plan doesn't change. We'll have to take a look at what went wrong. The main point was that I didn't have any strength in my legs, and therefore I couldn't do the first climb in the front group. We tried to get back on and got to 1 minute, but it wasn't really working. That's life. That's the Giro. That's why this race is so beautiful. The goal doesn't change. The team started with a goal, that's still the same, and on we go.
Well, it was a mystery to Mitchelton Scott what happened to Esteban Chavez at that stage. The damage at the end of the day was, well, it was complete, wasn't it? 25 minutes Esteban Chavez lost, slipped well down from second place overall. He had teammates with him all day, Roman Kreuziger, Bewley, of course, Chris Juul Jensen and Swain Tuft, who actually finished another 5 minutes back in the last group on the road. And it was just not what we were expecting from stage 10 of the Giro, the first day after the rest day. Quite a long stage again. It went from Penne, where the pasta is from. No.
Further to our conversation about Penne the other day, and the, you don't particularly, it's not one of your favourite shapes of pasta, but have you ever had smooth penne?
Without the ridges?
Without the ridges, but it's actually an inferior kind of penne, because you know why penne is so effective at holding sauces?
Because of the ridges?
Because of the surface area.
Indeed, but this is not the pasta podcast. Well, this is, but the stage was 244 kilometres from Penne to Gualdo Tadino. It started with, straight up a hill, a difficult climb. And this morning as we strolled around the buses, I was immediately struck by just how many riders were warming up. At one point, the whole Movistar team were riding on turbo trainers. Some riders were using the rollers, but an awful lot of riders were spinning their legs for a good 15 minutes or so before the stage start. So we were anticipating a very fast, difficult start and the battle to get into that first break. And the first break went with some strong riders in it. Luis Leon Sanchez, Harlinson Pantano, Valerio Conti, Ben Hermans, Matti Mohoric, Bauman of Team Lotto Enel Jumbo, who was away the other day. Ballerini again, keeping up Androni's 100% record of getting into the breaks. Ben King, Mosca, Nylands, Tony Martin, doesn't get much stronger than that, and Mads Pedersen, and Tom Scully. And those 13 riders got quite a decent gap, but the big news was that Esteban Chavez, second overall, was in trouble on the climb. And once the gaps opened and everybody knew, the hammer went down at the front from teams that were interested in putting Chavez out of the picture. For a long while, Quickstep were chasing because they had Viviani in that big second group as well. I say big, it was probably around 20-25 riders at that stage. And that meant that original break of 13 riders all got brought back, with the exception of Tony Martin initially. But it all got brought back. Martin was then caught as well. At the intermediate sprint, Simon Yates in the pink jersey went for it and took 3 seconds time bonus ahead of Thibaut Pinot. And as we got into the final kilometres of the race, 77 kilometres to go, Davide Frapporti was out in front on his own. And the story was that the pink jersey group was around 3/4 of a minute down, and the Chavez-Viviani group was over 6 minutes down, and that gap was going up and up. Frapporti eventually was joined by Davide Villela of Astana, who went clear with around 40 kilometres to go, and that sparked the final move of the race. Matej Mohoric, the eventual winner, went across to Villela. They caught Frapporti, and then just at the bottom of kind of the last significant climb, Frapporti was dropped immediately. Behind, there was a chase of Nico Denz of AG2R, Alessandro De Marchi of BMC, and Sergio Henao of Sky. There was a problem for Tom Dumoulin, crash on the descent, swapped his bike. And then on the final descent, the Anifo climb, Mohoric went clear. By this stage, Denz had bridged up to that little group, and Denz was the only rider who could go with him, and those two went to the finish. Mohoric led from quite a long way out. Denz was very disappointed not to be able to come round him. But the story of the day, Esteban Chavez completely out of the picture as far as the GC is concerned. Mitchelton Scott's position has changed significantly, but what does it mean for the Giro now, Daniel?
Well, it's a shame, I think, from the race's point of view, because it set up this fantastic scenario whereby one team namely Mitchelton Scott, had two riders who were in very dangerous positions, one in the pink jersey, Chavez just behind, and that sort of counterbalanced the clear superiority of the rider who I probably would say is still the main favourite, Tom Dumoulin, in time trials. That is no longer the case. They no longer have that advantage, and it was just a huge surprise, really. The climb was very hard, and kind of ironically enough, Mitchelton Scott seems to be the team that were taking that climb most seriously. Certainly, you know, based on what I heard this morning and also yesterday on the rest day, the Matt White, the direct sportif who we heard from earlier, had driven the first 100 kilometres of the stage yesterday. I'm not sure too many other direct sportifs did that. He thought that it was brutal. He was surprised how hard it was, and obviously the riders were briefed. I saw Chavez, he came out of the bus pretty early this morning. Looked, I mean, we all know he's sort of this smiling, cheeky, chappy figure. That's at least the image that he tends to convey. And he looked pretty serious, he looked pretty tense this morning. I did ask a couple of people in and around the team whether they'd got wind of some sort of problem before the stage. That wasn't the case. Apparently, he was just going through his normal routine. But and for a climber, one of the best climbers in the race, to get dropped so badly on a climb like that is a shock. And I would suggest it's unlikely that could be just allergies. I don't know, Lionel. What do you think?
Well, I think that Simon Yates, while he has lost a very useful ally from just behind him overall, the fact that Yates is now 41 seconds ahead of Tom Dumoulin and looking to steal time at every possible opportunity, in one way, you could look at it both ways. If you're a sort of negative naysayer, you know, doomsday scenario type like I am, it would be obviously seen as a disaster that Chavez has slipped away because they would have two cards to play on the mountain stages. But on the other hand, it does simplify things a little bit for Mitchelton Scott. You know, there's one of the questions we didn't get to play in our press conference rest day episode last night because we forgot was from a listener asking what Mitchelton Scott would do, and we asked Richard Moore to answer that one on our behalf. The question and the answer are now redundant, you know, 24 hours later, because it's a very simple thing that all of Mitchelton Scott's eggs are in Simon Yates's basket.
Yeah. However, the idea that they're now in a better position because Chavez has a clear role, and he's now going to be Simon Yates's domestic, I think, is a bit sort of fatuous. Mario Cipollini on Italian TV espoused that, or he expounded that barking mad theory that you know, they were actually better off tonight. Well, you know, if that was the case, then why didn't Matt White get Chavez to sit up anyway at any point over the last few days and, you know, turn off the road, go and find a nice trattoria or steady and order himself a plate of spaghetti. And so, you know, he could then be 25 minutes down on general classification. And, you know, that, according to Mario Cipollini, that would be a wonderful position to be in.
Well, I didn't say it was a better position. I said it simplified things for them, which actually, it does, really.
Actually, now that I mention it, talking about Mario Cipollini and turning off the route for a plate of spaghetti, he did that once in the Giro d'Italia. He went in a break. He attacked off the front. I think it was in 1997. I'm sure this story has been slightly embellished, but this was what was written at the time. He went in a breakaway and, booked himself into or booked a table at a spaghetti or something off the route.
Well, we've got to follow up on something with Adam Hansen of Lotto Fix All. There's been some tweeting about maybe a couple of days ago, whenever this was, that Hansen and another rider attacked off the front and then hid and let the bunch go past and then settled in at the back. I mean, I don't know whether this is a Twitter wind-up or not, but we will go and investigate that tomorrow morning. I was just going to say, Daniel, although Chavez has slipped down, it means everyone shuffles up, obviously, at one place overall. Simon Yates is still in the pink jersey, Viviani still in, Ciclamino leading the points competition, Yates still has the King of the Mountains, and Calapaz is still in the white jersey. I have to say, Simon Yates in the press conference this evening, he didn't look, I mean, he said all the right things, but he looked relaxed, he looked pretty comfortable. He was more expansive in his answers, certainly, than he has been in the past. And I think he's certainly, whether today has simplified things in his mind and solved that question of, I am the leader in this race, that could answer that. Could be why he was looking pretty chipper this evening.
Well, I was going to say chipper, or was he sanguine or sanguinaccio?
Well, yeah, I actually asked the first question in the press conference. I'll summarise what Simon Yates said in a moment, but at the end of his answer, he said this.
Not sure about that nickname, by the way.
Yeah, this is my one-man campaign to get this nickname to catch on, Sanguinaccio Volante, which means the flying black pudding. I'm slightly worried about how he might take it, that he might think it was somehow disrespectful or, taking the mickey.
I think he thought it was very disrespectful. Very, very disrespectful.
I don't think he did. I think he's taking it exactly as I meant it, which was... the Italians were the masters, weren't they, of these kind of nicknames for riders. And back in the 50s, 60s, every rider would have a nickname, the something of somewhere. And so we're continuing that tradition, that Giro tradition. Somebody on Twitter called Brendan Ashbrook has designed a logo, a black pudding with wings, and the wording Sanguinaccio Volante. If you check him out, his Twitter handle is Brendan Ashbrook. He's suggesting we make these into pink t-shirts. We might have to have a word with Rafa about that. But just to summarise a little bit what Simon Yates said, he said he was obviously disappointed that Chavez had such a bad day. He said there was no signs that Chavez was struggling before the start. You know, he didn't give anything away. They felt they had a good rest day. They were relaxed. He did say that tactically he would prefer Chavez to be up there because it gives them two cards to play. But he said he's confident. He's got good legs and good form. He knows that his rivals are strong, so he can't underestimate them. He's self-confident as always, and he knows what he's trying to do. He was asked whether he was frightened of the final week, and he said, not scared of the third week, but I'm scared of the time trial. And that's why he's trying to chip away at get these seconds wherever he possibly can. There's no doubting his intent in the way he's racing. It's been impressive so far.
And just on Lionel, well, you mentioned that he seemed very relaxed in the press conference. He did a press conference yesterday on the rest day, and I actually asked him one of the question marks over young riders in particular who take a major jersey or the leader's jersey in a major tour for the first time is how they will deal with the post-stage faff, the shenanigans, the mixed zones, the press conferences and so forth and so forth. And I asked him whether the fact that he has been through that on a fairly regular basis over the last two or three years, because he's held the white jersey or young riders jersey in a number of races, whether that had helped and it had held him in good stead. And he said, yeah, it had. And consequently, you know, he wasn't really finding it too much of a burden to do all of that and to lose about an hour every night. That's kind of comes with the territory of leading a major tour, doesn't it?
Well, it does indeed. And, there's a tricky-ish day tomorrow, we think, you know, that even the flatter stages at the end of the week, you know, they we've seen anything can happen in the Giro, but he's taking everything in his stride. And he has got still the support of this incredible team. Mitchelton Scott have really come here with a game plan, and notwithstanding Chavez slipping away from the overall standings, he will still have a role to play in the race. I mean, he's still an excellent climber. You know, if today's performance and his struggles on that first climb were just a blip, caught out maybe just by the pace at the start, or just it could have been poor positioning and then trying to overcompensate, think?
To lose as many as 3 minutes in the end? I really don't think so. I mean, there were a number of riders, it being after the rest day, and rest days or the day after the rest day is notorious for causing problems with some riders. There were a few riders, I think, who had a spot of bother on that first climb. Sam Oomen told one of our Dutch colleagues, that he felt terrible on that first climb. But Sam Oomen is not as good a climber as Esteban Chavez. Sam Oomen did not get dropped. Esteban Chavez lost minutes, which suggest to me that there was something more amiss than just a rest day that he didn't really digest, or allergies.
Well, we shall see. Now, just wrapping up with Mitchelton Scott, Daniel.
We're talking a lot about cycling tonight, aren't we?
Well, there's been a blooming good bike race on. I mean, yeah, they did do a lot of cycling today. And yesterday there was no cycling, so we're making up for it, aren't we?
Okay.
That's how. Okay. But sticking with Mitchelton Scott just and just wrapping up with them, Daniel, Kilometre Zero, Fiori Pista, is Swain's World tomorrow. Tell us what this is going to be about.
Swain's World, it's a window into the psyche of one of the most interesting riders in the peloton, 41-year-old Swain Tufte. It was his birthday a couple of years ago at Stalwart.
A couple of years ago.
A couple of days ago, Lionel. I'm just checking you're paying attention because there was another error.
Move on.
There's another error that I made yesterday that you should have picked up on and you didn't. Anyway, he turned 41 a couple of days ago. He might be riding his last Grand Tour here at the Giro. So the Kilometre Zero that we're going to release tomorrow is a sort of, it's a bit of a kind of think piece in Swain Tuff's own words about how he conceives of life and cycling and so forth. Anyway, one of the things we talked about was how he's noticed his body change over the years and the topic of warming up before stages, which became very, very relevant for Mitchelton Scott today.
I know what I used to be able to do, like, say, for example, on a hard start on a tomorrow stage, you know, 15K uphill. When I was younger, I wouldn't have thought about that. I'd be like, well, I might get dropped, or, like, I'll be able to hang on the back of the bunch. And now I have to warm up. I have to do all of these different like, I'll still have to ride tomorrow on the front. Depending on what shakes down. But I'll have to start the day on the ergo and do everything I can to make sure I don't lose a lot of time on that first climb. So
how do you know that is absolutely necessary? Was there a period when, you know, you maybe weren't doing that and you started to notice and then you had a eureka moment? Oh, yeah, if I warm up.
For sure. It's like you have a rest day, and if you don't, like today we did couple hours and then came straight onto the ergos, you know, just to keep the body and the heart rate up. Because that's another thing too, is like when you do rest, your body just wants to shut down. Yeah. So it's like today you had to go out and be like, no, we're still in this and we're still going to keep pushing. So yeah, and I think it was in the tour years ago, I realized like if I just do 20 minutes on the ergo, ramp up to like a proper heart rate, changes everything in the start for me. And if I start cold, you know, like 2K neutral, bang into a climb, it's just like you explode, you know. And again, everyone's different. Yatesy, for example, wouldn't matter if he trained today, nothing. He would just sleep, and tomorrow no warm up, and he'll fly up that climb. Obviously, two totally different people. But human physiology is really different that way. And, you know, like, I'll say for a lot of the workers, like Chris Yule Jensen and Sam Bewley and myself, we all are bigger. We sweat a lot more. So we also can pack on a lot more water because our body's always trying to recover from, you know, you ride 5 hours full gas. You need recovery. So, yeah, it's like learning all those things throughout the years. It's just little things like that can change a lot for you.
A San Francisco.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. I assume you're watching the Giro d'Italia out there if you're listening to the podcast, but if you're in one of the cities that's home to a Rafa clubhouse and they're dotted all over the world, drop in and watch the race live with fellow fans of the Giro, have a coffee and so on. There'll be big screens and Italian themed food and drink. Well, there's certainly a cafe in London that I drop into every now and again. This is a nice place if you've got a bit of spare time in the afternoon, go and watch the stage at a Rafa clubhouse.
A Rafa clubhouse is a bit like golf clubhouses. Do you get scowled at if you wear your if you forget to take your cap off or you wear jeans?
No, very welcoming. Very welcoming. All are welcome. There are no such rules. I mean, golf, goodness me. We're not mentioning golf in the cycling podcast. While we are talking about Rafa, all listeners of the Cycling Podcast can win some Rafa swag and some Science in Sport swag, courtesy of our two sponsors. Simply retweet tonight's episode and add a short comment stating why you listen to the Cycling Podcast, along with the hashtag Giro101. Now, last week's winner was Liam Heisjulien. I hope that's correct. My pronunciation is frequently wanting, as you know, Liam. But congratulations, you've won a Rafa Core long sleeve jersey and a Science in Sport 4-hour fuel pack. If you could drop us an email at contact@thecyclingpodcast.com to claim your prize, Jonathan Rowe will sort that out for you. So well done, Liam. A couple of goodies will be on their way to you. And while we're talking about competition-y things, the Cycling Podcast is a finalist in the British Podcast Awards at the weekend. That will be announced on Saturday evening. We'll have our fingers crossed here in Italy. And if you want to vote for us in the Listeners Award, go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote and vote for us. Now, Daniel, the winner today was Mati Mohoric, Slovenian rider, young rider with Bahrain Merida, an important win for Bahrain, get off the mark in this Giro. Mohoric, we all know his talent. He demonstrated his talent from a very young age. He was the World Junior Road Race Champion when the championships were held in Limburg in the Netherlands in 2012. He beat Caleb Ewan in the sprint that day. And the following year, he stepped up to win the under-23 World Road Race Championships in Tuscany, not a million miles from here, when he was still only 18. And I believe, this is one for Corrections Corner tomorrow, possibly, but I'm pretty confident, he is the youngest rider to have won the under-23 road race at the tender age of 18. And on that day, he finished 3 seconds ahead of Louis Menkes, who was the silver medalist. And both Simon and Adam Yates raced that day and finished 17th and 19th, respectively. So, you know, we see this happen, don't we? Generations of riders graduate, and you spot the riders who've made it from the World Championships under 23 and have gone on to confirm that early talent in the pro ranks. Sometimes you notice the names that don't make it, but Mohoric is clearly a talent. I remember he won a stage of the Vuelta last year at Cuenca.
Similar circumstances.
Yeah, it was similar circumstances. Probably a harder finish, but it was a race that he really took by the scruff of the neck. And I was impressed with him in the press conference afterwards. You know, he talked about the plan was to get into the breakaway and obviously achieved that the first time round, but then they all got caught again because the peloton was trying to put time into Esteban Chavez and also put Elia Viviani out of the back. But when Davide Villela went with around 40 kilometres to go, Mohoric asked Pozzovivo, that's Domenico Pozzovivo, the leader of Bahrain Merida, who is, his objective is to try and finish on the podium here. Mohoric asked Pozzovivo if he could go, and Pozzovivo gave the green light. And then once you've been given permission by a rider who's a GC contender, you've really got to finish it off. He wasn't too sure that he could win the sprint, said he didn't know too much about Nico Dents of AG2R, so he tried to attack him a couple of times, and then he led out the sprint from a long way. But he said that what he didn't want to do was have to come from behind at a slow speed. He wanted to be able to set the pace. And it was an impressive old performance from him, wasn't it?
It was, Lionel. It was a guy who I thought might have lost his way 2 or 3 years ago, partly because he always had to remind yourself how young he still was, precisely because he turned pro so early, and he's still only 23 now. But it's going to be interesting to see what he develops into, because he's sort of developing this niche for himself as a sort of what the French call a baroudeur, i.e. an escape artist. And he's someone who obviously has a lot of power to call upon in a finale. I mean, I don't think he's a particularly great sprinter under normal circumstances, but he was just simply too powerful for Dents today.
He was. I saw Nico Dents as he came back to the AG2R bus, and looked very disappointed. Initially looked like he was going to have a quick word, but then had one foot on the bus and thought better of it and got into the bus. I mean, he's been writing a blog on his website, nico-dents.de. It's in German, but I was using a Translate app to see what he was writing. And he's just been summarising his day in the Giro every day, and it struck me that the last number of days in the race, you know, he's been doing an awful lot of work for others. His job is to shelter people from the wind and fetch and carry and generally be a support rider. So his disappointment at missing out, particularly when he was in the A1 position, sitting on Mohoric's wheel and trying to come round. But Mohoric went from such a long way out, it actually gave Dents quite a lot to do to just get level, where he didn't manage to get level. It was a near miss for him, and I'm sure, well, we'll see what his blog says tomorrow, but probably we'll look at that as one that got away. Also at the finish, I spoke briefly with Tristan Hoffman, director sportif with Bahrain Merida, and just wanted to find out what this victory meant to Bahrain Merida, and also because he was in a team car following the last group or second, you know, the big group on the road, try and find out from him what had happened in the early part of the stage.
First of all, can you tell me what the win means for the team?
Yeah, a win in a Grand Tour, it's a very, yeah, for sure very special. There are many teams here, not everybody can win the stage, and if you like what he did, like the day before, after days before, he was also very aggressive to go in the breakaways. He tries, and today it was a very hard start. He was already up there with the first, and then in the final he did it again.
But of course the break came back and he had to go again.
But that was, he showed already that he's in a very good shape. Everybody's chasing everybody in the race today. And then, in the final, he had still the good legs, and he went.
For most of the day, I guess you were behind the second group. Can you tell us what was going on? Because we really have no idea what was happening behind there.
It was from the gun, as you know, directly climbing. And then the whole peloton explodes. And what I see is that I was behind a group of 20 guys with two of my riders. And then the two pelotons were chasing each other. Because Chavez was a little bit behind, and in front they don't want him to come back. So they were chasing, and of course Quickstep wanted to have this bunch sprint. And then one moment they gave up the second group, and the first group could go for the victory.
So was it one of those ones when it was a small group, small gap, and then suddenly the gap grew quickly?
No, for us, we already had to look, okay, the time limits and everything. But in the front, they went full gas to fight for their positioning and to get a bunch sprint or to avoid a bunch sprint.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. If you would like to get 25% off Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com, and when you go to the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. In previous episodes, I had said that the discount code was valid on everything. It is valid on everything as long as that product is not already...
You liar.
I mean, there has to be some kind of intent for it to be a lie. I don't want to blame anyone here, but I was working off some slightly inaccurate information. But the fact is, as long as the product is not already subject to another discount, then you can get 25% off. So it's still a fantastic offer from our sponsor, Science in Sport. Now, Daniel, it was the rest day yesterday. You were off very busy, putting me to shame, really. I mean, I was doing a lot of unseen work, you know, preparing for our press conference episode, which we recorded last night, where we answered listeners' questions. We'll do that again on the rest day. Well, I won't, but you and Richard will do that again on the rest day. And one of your assignments was to go and meet Chris Froome, who's not had the start to the Giro that you hoped and planned for.
I had an appointment with Chris Froome in the Team Sky Hotel in Pescara in the morning. It was the morning after his, pretty ropey afternoon on Gran Sasso d'Italia. Here's what he said. So I'm going to start with a test of your Italian sporting knowledge. We're surrounded by signed Del Piero jerseys, Roberto Baggio. Those names say anything to you?
Not much, to be honest. I won't lie. I have no clue who they are.
Okay. And we'll move on.
So Chris, yesterday I went up a mountain, got stuck for 3 hours afterwards. What did you do yesterday? Tell me about your day.
Oh, I probably went up at a very similar speed to you. Well, assuming you walked up. No, tough day out there yesterday. It was obviously didn't go to plan. I felt as if I've been on the back foot ever since that crash before the TT in Jerusalem. Just haven't been feeling myself on the bike. I've been feeling out of sync. I've been feeling unbalanced. But just hoping to get through day by day, and hoping that obviously I came into the race hoping to ride into the race and reach basically full steam in the second half of the race, which obviously I'm still hoping to build on that now and to come into myself in the second part of the race. Obviously with the plan of going for the Giro and the Tour, that was always going to be my approach, not to come into the Giro absolutely pinging and just try and hang on to it, because then I would come to the Tour completely cooked. So I think building into the race was the right approach, but I think the crash really did throw me, and also the crash 2 days ago as well didn't help. I mean, it wasn't serious, it was low speed, but it's still another knock on the right side, which was really feeling out of sync. And so I think, I mean, it's a big deficit now. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's definitely going to be very, very difficult to make that time up, especially with such strong contenders here. It's really impressive to see how Orica's been riding. Simon, probably not the only one to get those two confused sometimes.
But, Saddam, I call them.
Saddam. But yeah, no, Simon, I mean, to see another Brit in the pink jersey is amazing. I mean, I couldn't be happier for him. He fully deserves it, and he's got a great team around him.
Chris, when you say out of sync, out of balance, is that the kind of thing that an osteopath could treat, is treating, or a chiropractor, or are you talking more about sort of grogginess and physiological feelings?
Well, I mean, I've been seeing the team osteo every day, trying to work on the little imbalances. I've got a bit of pain on the right side. I think the left is compensating. So, yeah, it's physical.
And so you say you've not felt yourself. Did you feel better before you got to Israel, a week before the Giro, effectively?
I did, and I think even the numbers reflected that. I mean, I was hitting my targets in training, and I haven't seen those numbers since I've been in the race so far.
Are you at the point now, so far down on general classification, that you can go for broke and that you're going to throw the kitchen sink at it, or do you still ride as though, you know, you've got the time trial coming up and you can take that time back off Yates?
Let's see. I mean, it's a race. Really, can't, we're nine days in. We're not even halfway, so a lot still can change. So I think we're going to take it on a day by day basis. It's going to depend on how I feel. If I feel back to myself again, I'd love to throw everything at it and try and get back up there. But let's see. Take it on a day by day case and see what opportunities there are.
Do you think there might be some opportunities in these medium mountain stages this week?
Potentially. I mean, they're hard days. I mean, even if you look at tomorrow, for example, the day after a rest day, it's not a mountaintop finish, but we're still doing 4,000 metres of vertical metres climbing. That's going to be a solid day.
The Italians love to think that the Giro is an impossible code to crack for someone who's not had a lot of experience in it, that it's different to the Tour, that it's harder than the Tour. And there was one newspaper report this week that said that adaptation is not in Chris Froome's DNA, and he's struggling to adapt to the mysteries of the Giro.
I mean, people will read into it what they want, but I mean, it is a very different race, and I mean, it's a very explosive race. It's a very unpredictable race. But the fundamentals are there. I mean, it's a bike race, and it's going to take a lot of work to come back from the position I'm in now. But We just have to look back at what Nibali did. I mean, he was over 3 minutes back when he won it a couple of years ago. So, yeah, that's in the back of my mind as well.
And Chris, you're now in the invidious position that one of the key climbs for you is going to be a climb that you've said is your least favourite climb of all, Monte Zoncolan last Saturday. You did a recce there a few weeks ago. Do you feel that you've slayed that dragon now?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I went to go and see it in Recon a few weeks ago, it just felt as if it was a completely different experience to when I went up there back in 2010, and I was going up there at walking pace and just suffering all my way up to the top, and it felt a lot better going there and actually seeing it again and comparing it with the climbs that I've done over the last 8-9 years of racing since then.
And just finally, Chris, obviously in the build-up to the race, there was talk about the salbutamol case that's ongoing. A few riders said some things that, you know, they don't think you should be here, or Tim Velen said a few things. Tom Dumoulin said he wouldn't be here if it was him. Have you said anything to those riders, and have you said anything to riders who have supported you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've been extremely open and chatted to guys about it, and I much prefer that when they actually come and speak to me about it than just go and speak behind my back, or when they don't really understand what's going on. It's a very complicated process, as I'm sure a lot of people are aware from the most recent study that was published. And there's a lot of different aspects that haven't actually become into the public domain yet. And I think once those aspects do become public, I think people will understand why I'm here racing and why I'm adamant I've done absolutely nothing wrong.
And you're not going home? There was a rumour last night, there was a Dutch journalist came to me and he said, Froome's going home tomorrow morning.
No. I'm here. I'm up for this. I'm up for this. I mean, yeah, it took a big, big blow yesterday, but gonna need more than that to send me home.
Interesting stuff there, Daniel, that he's kind of admitting he's felt out of sync since day one. Normally riders try to keep that kind of thing pretty close to their chest, and normally Froome would.
Yeah, but Lionel, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that he'd never heard, or he didn't know who Roberto Baggio was or Alessandro Del Piero was.
No, I mean, staggering, really. But I have to... Roberto Baggio, of course, the Italian footballer, the divine ponytail, if we're talking nicknames as we were a bit earlier, missed the penalty in the World Cup final penalty shoot against Brazil in 1994. But, of course, Chris Froome would only have been about 8 or 9 then.
No excuse. I mean, I know who Ferenc Puskas was and Fausto Coppi. Anyway.
Well, we wonder about, you know, how much Chris Froome knew about cycling when he was growing up. Well, clearly he wasn't watching a lot of football when he was growing up in Kenya and South Africa. But there was a few interesting things in what he said there, not just about his condition, but also confirming that the plan was to go for the Giro and the Tour, and that he was coming into the Giro not absolutely top, because it's a long old summer. He's having to rewrite his plans on a pretty much a daily basis, isn't he, now? Don't you think he's having to monitor how he feels and look for the opportunities?
Well, I think, I don't know whether it's stubbornness or bloody-mindedness, but Sky certainly seem very determined that he's now going to ride the Tour de France. That's not necessarily what is being reported and speculated about in the press. There was another piece in La Gazzetta yesterday saying that it remains unlikely that Froome is going to do the Tour de France. I think there's pressure from ASO not to field him at the Tour de France, whatever happens with his salbutamol case. I think some of the pressure is coming from the UCI and David Lapartien. But Sky and I don't think are really budging on that. They're also, well, based on our conversation yesterday, not budging on what they want to achieve at this Giro and the fact that Froome wants to stay and is going to stay for the foreseeable future at this Giro. There were all sorts of rumours the night before that he was going to leave, that you know, he'd be found not at the Team Sky Hotel but at Pescara Airport the next morning, and no, it wasn't the case.
Well, we will probably find out on Monte Zoncolan on Saturday exactly what Chris Froome can do in the final week. He will obviously be looking to see which of the riders slip, because he could easily gain half a dozen places just by having a solid day without having to do anything absolutely dramatic. If he finds himself in a little group of two or three, it's while it's a long way up to Simon Yates overall, you know, if he could get some seconds back, 40, 50 seconds back somehow, suddenly he's back into the, you know, back into a position from which he could really look to strike. But that's all ahead of us, and there are some tricky old days to come before that.
I know I'm worried about our Pichial Tartufo Nero, our pasta with black truffle. It's getting late. It's been a long old day.
You don't have to persuade me, Daniel. Let's go for dinner. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Ci giure nella tenevo giardina che la raccolgo l'acqua e l'ovina.